Welcome to Western Civilization. This is the first lecture for the Western Civilization course, and the lecture's name is What is Western Civilization? At the start of any class, it is a good idea to stop and consider what it is you're going to study. So, what is civilization? If you look up dictionary definitions of civilization, they largely have to do with people living together in an organized way over long periods of time. So here are some common factors or components of civilization. As I said, you have groups of people living together on a large scale over time. This would include cities, nations, but any situation where you have groups of people in an organized way living together in some fashion. This would include, in the earliest history of civilization, things like diversification in trade. Not everyone farms. Some provide other services. So you see people with various skills in various situations working together in a complex way in a civilization. But civilization also includes the laws, culture, and habits that make it possible for those people to live together and things that develop from that. So, for example, one of the most important elements of civilization is language. Probably the first hallmark of the earliest civilizations is some form of written language. Also, the Greeks, as an example, said that anyone who didn't speak Greek was a barbaroi. They considered anyone who did not speak the Greek language to be uncivilized. That word has the root of barbarian in it, because the Greeks said, well, anyone who doesn't speak Greek just goes bar, bar, bar. It's not civilized. So it has an idea contained in it of a preferred way of living. Another component of those laws and cultural phenomena are law codes. All of the earliest civilizations have some form of law codes that governs how civilizations and peoples are called to live together. And this has been true all throughout history. There is no civilization without some body of laws that governs the way they relate to one another. Finally, contained in the idea of civilization is a citizenship, an idea that there is a society, a country, a patria, to use the Latin word, a part of which one is a citizen, one has membership in it. So civilization is a very complex idea. But it's worth pointing out that this is a class in Western civilization. So why are we studying a class in Western civilization and not world civilization? Well, we'll get to that. But first, let's talk about Western. It should be pointed out that Western civilization can be something of a misnomer. After all, South America is a part of Western civilization, and we will not be treating that, or at least it's a part of the Western Hemisphere. And to point out another problem with the term Western, Jews and the Jewish tradition are usually considered to be a part of Western civilization, but Jews are traditionally considered a part of Eastern culture. So what do we mean by Western civilization? Typically, Western civilization refers to the cultural mix of Hebrew, Greek, Roman, and European culture through the ages. And that would include all the civilizations or cultures that were influenced by that. There are certainly other tributaries to contribute to Western civilization. For example, Egyptian culture. There are also dead ends to this civilization, components of the civilization that died out and probably should have died out. Another way of looking at this is many people like to think of Western civilization in terms of the major cities that have influenced it. So you have Jerusalem. Of course, Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, will represent both Judaism, the Old Testament, and Jewish culture and civilization, but it will also represent the roots of Christianity. A second city that is often discussed in regard to Western civilization is Athens. This is, of course, the most representative city for Greek culture, including all of the art, philosophy, literature, drama, sports, and everything else that the Greeks contribute to Western civilization. A third city is the city of Rome, and of course, the Roman Republic and then the Roman Empire and their contributions in terms of the idea of a republic and government and their organization and roads and taxes. And a final city that is often cited in this regard is the city of London. Now, we might cite other major cities in Europe, but for our purposes as students in the United States of America, we can say that London is perhaps the most influential. As I said, that's not without controversy. Some of our founding fathers would have perhaps pointed to Paris or other cities. But for our purposes in this class, those four cities are good placeholders or signifiers for the major streams of Western civilization. But as we indicated a moment ago, civilization is largely about a preferred way of living, a better way of living. It is assumed in the idea that if one is civilized, they have progressed from uncivilized ways. And so in many ways, Western civilization is about holding up or studying or discerning the best parts of civilization or the best parts of human society as humans have lived together through history. There is a classical way of speaking about these matters. And the classical way, and when I say classical, I mean Greek authors, particularly Plato and Aristotle. They both said that humans are on a quest for, or should be on a quest for, the good, the true, and the beautiful. And so as we study these cultures and the history that goes with them, we are not just wanting to focus or learn about anything from that stream, but we are trying to look for the good things, the things that are admirable and worth noting and worth preserving. So, for example, there's not too many people that would say that the gladiatorial games in ancient Rome, in which slaves were forced to fight to the death for the entertainment of the masses, was a good thing. You don't hear too many people arguing for the return of the gladiatorial games. So we would say that's a piece of civilization that was bad, or we might even say it was an uncivilized piece of civilization. So in this class, and as students of this class, we are looking for the cream that rises to the crop, the best of culture and civilization and government and philosophy and literature. So we are cultivating a love for the good, the true, and the beautiful as classically understood. You might define the good as love manifested in virtue. Now, virtue is an idea that we will be returning to many times in these courses. It was an understanding that human character could be shaped in a definitive way over time with practice. And so love manifests in the practices of a culture. That is the good. The true could be understood as reason, or logic, or rationality, and in particular, the true has to do with engaging with things as they really are, not as you want them to be, or as you pretend that they are. So examples of this might include engagement with the world as it really is in science, or engagement with truth as it really is, ideas as they really are in philosophy. And finally, the beautiful. We cannot go without the beautiful. Beauty is a major component of what humans long for, and the beautiful in the Western tradition is a reverence for beauty of creation and creativity. Of course, this is a way of speaking about these things from the classical tradition, which again refers to Greece and Rome, but there's also a scriptural way of referring to it. The Apostle Paul in Philippians 4:8, in a passage many people are familiar with and have memorized, says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things." So we are in this class not just learning about facts from history, but learning to discern the good, the true, and the beautiful from the tradition of Western civilization. Which brings us to another very important term for this class, and that is the term culture. If you begin to try to define this word culture, you will find that it is one of the most difficult words to define. But I'm going to give a few very simple definitions. And I will put it very straightforwardly this way. Culture is what people make of the world. Now I want you to consider that. Culture is what people make of the world. There is a great variety of things that that could include. It could include sundials, which takes the rotation of the Earth as a way of measuring time and uses the rising and setting of the sun and its movement through the sky. But it could also include something as simple as clothing or language. These are all things that humans have taken from the created world as it is and turned into something else. And so culture is what people make of the world. And this includes at a large, enormous scale of the culture of the United States of America down to the culture of your family and how your family makes something of the world and its time in the world. Maybe one of the first most important symbols of culture or representations of culture in history is the garden. If you look in the book of Genesis, the garden that God sets Adam in becomes a place of culture because Adam is set in it. God has made the garden, but Adam is then to care for the garden. And one would assume that he pulls plants that he doesn't like or positions things as he wants them or puts flowers in certain places and green plants in other places. But the point is, he takes what is given in nature and in creation and makes something more out of it, something better out of it. So it's important to understand that when we say culture, this includes what we make of the world, and what we make of the world includes everything from erasers to elevators, from coffee to calisthenics. Just consider coffee for a minute. This is a piece of culture with so many things that go along with it. After all, coffee is a drink made from the seed of a fruit from Africa that is roasted, ground, hot water is run over it, and it produces this drink that is a stimulant. And if we were just to do the history of coffee, we could write a rather big book. So to get back to this idea of culture, though, God is a maker. God is someone who has made things. And in the scriptural view, humans are also to make like God. Birds make nests, but birds don't make nests with the variety of that humans make houses. So humans, one of their unique roles in the world is to be co-creators with God or sub-creators with God, taking what he has made and making more out of it, bringing the potential out of it. Genesis gives a picture of the human race that says humans were put in the garden, the world that God had made, to keep it and dress it, and to name the animals. And as we'll discuss in this class, naming is far more than just assigning random sounds to signify certain animals. Naming has to do with noticing what God has made, appreciating what God has made, describing what God has made. And I would suggest that this includes much of what we call art and science. So we are called to be a part, we are called ourselves to make with God, to be culture makers. Another very important point about culture is that culture is cumulative. It grows. Consider language. People do new things with language all the time. We call it coining words. People come up with new words, but that would not be possible if we didn't have hundreds of years of the history of English language that went before us and comes to us in the form of everyday speech and books and movies. And so culture builds on itself, and none of us are immune or set apart from being a part of a culture and having to grow and build in that culture. Another very important understanding or component of culture is if you consider the meaning of the word or the etymology of the word, culture means cultivation. Cultivation means taking care of something so that it flourishes, and in particular, taking care of something worth taking care of. So consider a garden. If you grow tomatoes, you want to cultivate the tomato plant. You want to stake it and help it grow and pinch off the parts of the plant that are going to be less fruitful, and you want maybe to fertilize it. But you also want to pull out the weeds, or at least keep weeds from growing in some way. And this is this is a great symbol for what we are doing as we study Western civilization and learn to understand culture and the best components of culture as we go along. So again, we're called with God to be co-creators, sub-creators, and cultivators of what is best in the world. Now, I want to get back to this question of this idea of why we study Western civilization and not, say, world civilization or Eastern civilization. And there are several reasons for this. One reason is that it is our civilization. Most of us who are taking this class are citizens of the United States of America. And as we know, the United States of America came from the country of Great Britain. And Great Britain had roots further in the past. And we can trace all of these streams back. So in many ways, the story of Western civilization is the story of our civilization, of our culture, of our historical roots. And we've got to know that story before we go on to know other stories. So that's one major reason we study Western civilization. But another reason we study Western civilization and not other civilizations is because Western civilization has been remarkably unique and productive in history. To cite just two examples, people from all kinds of fields, from all kinds of religious backgrounds, recognize that in Central Europe, in just a handful of cities in the 17th, 18th centuries, modern science was born. Modern science as we know it was born with the scientific method. And many people have asked the question, why did it emerge there and not Africa or South America or China? And many people debate this, but they don't debate that it did originate there. And so there's something unique about Western civilization, that it produced modern science, as an example. It also produced through various forms of government and political philosophies, some of the most prosperous times in the history of the world. Regardless of how one feels about democracy and the Western liberal tradition, it cannot be denied that the standard of living for thousands and thousands of people, the standard of education and basic health, has been raised by the countries that were a part of the Western tradition and countries influenced by them. So Western civilization has been remarkably productive, and we want to try to get into some of the reasons why that is the case. Now, it's worth noting that when we are suggesting that Western civilization is worth celebrating, is worth studying, is worth maybe even preferring to some extent, we're not saying that it has no fault. It is very important to be self-critical. In fact, it has been pointed out that the literature of the ancient Hebrews, the Old Testament, is some of the most self-critical literature in the history of the world. No other nation has produced literature that is so reflective upon the faults and sins of its own people. And so we must recognize the importance of being self-critical. We are not saying Western civilization in all its ways is perfect. But we also recognize that it's important to avoid relativism. Relativism is the idea that everybody's ways are equal, that everybody's ways are good, that we're not in a position to say one way is better than another. Well, this class is going to be quite politically incorrect and suggest that that's simply not the case. There are some ways of doing things, some ways of living that are better than others. It is better not to have ritual suicide in a culture. It is better not to abort babies. And if a culture privileges or holds up or defends certain ways of doing things that are worse, then we can be critical of that culture. So it is important to note that part of this class is going to be, in some people's eyes, very judgmental. We are going to say that some cultures are better than other cultures in certain ways, that some civilizations' ways of doing things is better than other civilizations' ways of doing things. So, to sum up what we have said in this first lecture, we are all humans are called to be artists and gardeners. We are called to be makers and cultivators. This is a part of what we as humans were created in the image of God to do. And in this course, we are going to learn to try to appreciate the best of Western civilization, the best of its ideas about government, law, politics, sports even. And in this process, I think you're going to learn that there are many things that you should like, many things you should be interested in that you're not currently interested in. And hopefully, part of what this class is going to do is give you a taste for the better things. And I don't mean the finer things, things that are luxurious, but things that are true and good and beautiful. Likewise, we may find that we like or prefer or are interested in things that are ugly and untrue. And hopefully, as a part of studying this class, we will learn to maybe leave those ways behind and look for better things. So it should be noted that you can learn to appreciate things you don't like right now. And there are things that you should like that you don't. In this course, we're going to learn where our civilization and our culture came from, where certain ideas and ways of doing things came from that we take for granted, that we assume are just normal. We're going to find that they're not that normal, that in fact, they came from particular circumstances, and there are other ways of doing them. But ultimately, I hope this class inspires us to be makers, to be producers of new culture that is good, true, and beautiful, making objects and practices and institutions that that contribute to God's desire to bring order and beauty and justice and peace to the world. Hopefully, we will be more able to cultivate the best books, the best ideas, the best practices, and to get rid of the worst. Now, as to some of the particulars of this course, this is not exactly a history course. We will, of course, be studying history. We will do surveys of the history of the Jewish people, of the history of the Greeks. But we're going to be doing more than that. It is a fuller package than merely history. We will also be covering important individuals in history. We will learn geography and find how the lay of the land and the way particular areas are shaped and the makeup of the soil shapes the culture. As I've already indicated, we will be looking at examples of culture that various civilizations produced, and this includes everything from art, so sculpture, paintings, to literature. Obviously, one of the most important things we do in Mars Hill is read the great books. And in the great books, you're going to learn about the epic tradition in Homer and Virgil and Dante and Milton. But culture includes things like architecture. Finally, we're going to be talking about institutions, government, religious institutions. And so there's a great variety of things that go into this class, not merely history. And then finally, in terms of what we hope to achieve, we're looking to do in these courses an overview of Western civilization. We are going to do the flyover. We might say that we're going to look at things in the macro, that is, with a wide lens and not in the micro, zeroing in on the details of a particular time and place. So hopefully what you come away with from these 2 years of Western civilization at Mars Hill is a sense of the wide view, of being able to place one culture chronologically in relation to another and major events chronologically in relation to other major events, but also to give some sense of the story of Western civilization from its beginnings in the Fertile Crescent to its hopeful continuation here in the United States of America and Europe and other parts of the world. It should also be noted that this class, Western Civilization at least two, ends in 10th grade. You will then pick up in 11th grade the continuation of that story in United States history. So another way of thinking about this class is as a background to United States history. You cannot know the history of the United States without knowing all the history that went into the making of the United States. And so these two classes, Western Civilization 1 and Western Civilization 2, are all a part of preparation for studying United States history. One last important note. In history at Mars Hill, we traditionally divide history into four major periods or four major epochs. And this is a breakdown in history that's neat and convenient and helpful. And so you need to learn to remember that and learn to be thinking in terms of, okay, when did this event occur? So those four major periods of history, from the beginning of history to 500 A.D., this is going to include the civilizations of Israel and Greece and Rome and early Christianity. This period we call the ancient world. So from the beginnings to 500 A.D. is the ancient world. From 500 A.D. to 1500 A.D., specifically geographically in Western Europe, we call the medieval period. And this is the period that we traditionally associate with knights and monks and the feudal system. So that is 500 to 1500, the medieval period, or the Middle Ages. Then 1500 to, it varies, but 1500 to say 1917, or maybe even 1500 to 1960, we call this period the modern world. This is the era when the Renaissance, the Reformation, the Enlightenment, later the American Revolution, and many other democratic revolutions take place. We call this period the modern era. Now, as I indicated, there's some fuzziness about the borders of this period because many people say the modern era continues, but many other people notice that something very significant happened in the world and people's outlook around the time of World War I. And so we call this period where there's this change of thinking, this maybe even rejection of certain modern values, we call it postmodern. Because quite frankly, we haven't come up with a better way of describing it. But this would describe the period, as I said, after modern values begin to be called into question. And you should know that we're living in the midst of that period of time of great turmoil. But this class will not cover the postmodern period. You'll cover that in other classes. For our purposes, we're going to rewind and go way back in time to the beginnings of civilization. So I look forward to these lectures and these classes with you, and we'll see you at the next lecture.